Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen.
I've been doing this podcast since September of 2012, and boy, are my lips tired.
This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. And our friend Jody Lynn isn't feeling well today, so she'll be taking this week off, and she will rejoin us again next week at this time. But we are not left alone because we have a wonderful pair of guests joining us today. They are Alan and Angie Thomas. They are here to talk about not dieting. Yeah, I know that sounds a little bit strange, but they actually think that dieting is a bad idea. And I think there are not going to be too many listeners who will disagree with that when they think about it, because I mean, we all know dieting is a major multi-billion dollar industry that has a lot of advocates and a whole lot more people who are frustrated. This is for the frustrated. So that's what we're all about today. We're going to learn how not to diet to get where you want to. Some of the concepts I think we're going to talk about here are going to be concepts we're used to talking about on a variety of different contexts, so it won't be really new. What's going to be new is where we're applying it, I think. But hey, I've been known to be wrong, so let's find out. I mean, before I even try to guess all this stuff, let's just find the whole thing out. So Alan and Angie, welcome to the program, guys. How are you doing today?
Great, thank you.
Great, thank you for having us.
Love having you here. So there's a whole story behind this, and we love stories. We love them because we can identify with them. We've lived many of them ourselves as hosts and as listeners. So we want to know your story, because especially with dieting, you always know what the story is, right? You know, I weighed 5,000 pounds and I lost 500,000 pounds in five days. You know, it was just wonderful. That's always the story, right? And I'm sure your story is something related to that. I'm kind of guessing, though, it goes a little bit beyond that. So tell us the story.
Yeah. We really began out of failure. I mean, honestly, in 2017, just about exactly 7 years ago today, we're just a few weeks past when it actually happened. I stepped on the scale and I saw 300 and something for the first time on my scale ever. And it wasn't something that I really enjoyed doing, was getting on the scale back in those days. And, you know, I had my bride was in the next room at, asleep still. It was very early in the morning. Our four kids, who were teenagers and preteen at the time, were, teenagers and older and grown both, I beg your pardon. They were, you know, I realized that the odds of me seeing my 65th birthday, I was 55 at the time, was almost zero. And, you know, I had been in the life insurance business for more than a decade, and dealt with primarily the senior community, people that are 65 and over. And just standing there on the scale, it was like God opened up this window to you know, something that never occurred to me. I could not remember one man that was more than 100 pounds overweight that was over 65 that I'd ever met. And I mean, I'd literally said in thousands. Now there's a few of them. We call them unicorns. I mean, I'd sat in thousands of homes, and there was always these pictures on the wall when you walked into, you know, the proverbial Miss Johnson's house, as we used to call her. And we'd walk in, she was widowed, and I would say, "Who's this?" "Oh, that was my husband. Well, he died of a heart attack. He died of diabetes. He died of all of these things that were obesity related." And it really hit me that she would likely call me her first husband because I'd be dead, not because she was shopping. To my knowledge, she's not shopping. Definitely around. We've been together 38 years. Together 44, but married 38. And so it was really just an aha moment for me that started that day. And, you know, like many times I started doing the things to change the number on the scale. But it led to us, me going on a very public journey where I committed to releasing more than 100 pounds in 265 days. And Angie joined me on that journey. She had some weight to lose, like a good spouse. She ate along with me, not as much as I did, but she was not morbidly obese, but she was obese, you know, and right there at that door of obesity. And And it led to us releasing more than 192 pounds, not in 265 days, but in 260 days. And it was never the diet. I mean, did we have to change what we eat? Of course we did. I mean, that's common sense. But it was never the diet. It was never the exercise plan. It was never me not knowing what to do. It was never her not knowing what to do. It was the decision and all those things that go along with the thinking side of it that I'd never considered. And people say, well, you solved it in 260 days. I said, yeah, it was 35 years of learning what not to do. And right. then the 260 right. days of doing the thing to do. So
you put it in that perspective, it actually sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, but it was failure. You know, so we recently were interviewed by a couple of physicians, and it was kind of interesting because I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nutritionist, I'm not a dietitian, I'm not a physical fitness expert, neither is Angie. And they said, so what are your credentials? I said, I failed miserably for 35 years. And that was really the credential, and it's led, you know, in our wildest dreams, in my no one could have ever convinced me that it would lead to us walking men and women out of obesity like we've done for the last 4 years. It was not on our radar. And I still kind of pinch myself and say, what the heck? It's like this cosmic joke, kind of. But it's fun.
Well, it's also a little bit scary too, because I mean, it was a cosmic joke in one sense, but in another sense, it was the cosmic joke was on you, and you realized you were a joke. That's frightening. I mean, you had a frightening moment that day.
Yeah, it was a moment that, you know, some of my friends, I'll never forget. One of my closest friends, he's a commercial airline pilot. He flew into Jacksonville a few weeks after our public commitment. And I thought he was just coming to visit me. And I had this, and it was just funny, but he later told me after the weight had all come off, he said, I thought you'd lost your mind. He said, I really committing publicly to drop more than 100 pounds like you're doing. He said, I thought you'd were off your rocker. He said, I didn't tell you that day, but I was making sure that you were sane. And really, it was just, it was interesting and to see, but you know, we're so inundated by diet advice. I mean, we're so inundated and there's so much shame around obesity or there's the alternate where we try to make it okay, except, you know, Byron Katie says, when I argue with reality, I lose, but only 100% of the time. And so when we argue with the reality that obesity can cause us to die 20 years early or 5 years early or be on all kind of meds and, you know, crazy stuff and just be this thing that is in our life that becomes this, 800 pound gorilla that nobody wants to talk about because we wear it between our elbows. And it's fascinating to Angie and I, as we talk to people every day. I mean, we talk to people that are struggling with 25, 50, 100, 200, 300 pounds of excess weight. And the thing that is really the most interesting and kind of the saddest too, is how much of our potential is being squashed by the shame of obesity. And how much of this, I mean, you do a podcast about being happy, and how many people go to bed every night wondering, I mean, and you may want to speak to that because that was really kind of your expertise.
Oh, well, about wondering, thoughts, wondering, but every night, and I did not know the number that his scale would read. I didn't even know what mine did, honestly. I lost 63 pounds in my journey, but I didn't like the scales either. But I did know that he was large, and I was scared every night when we went to bed. That my last thought was, will he wake up tomorrow?
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it was scary, honestly. And our children worried, and, you know, as well. But I never nagged him. That his mother did that well. So I just tried to do my
part. Covered in the family.
Yeah. Tried to do my part. I was the coward. But I told him after the fact that I was grateful, and and that because he never knew that worry I had. And I know I'm not alone. So,
yeah, it is interesting. And to speak to that, I mean, my mom who passed a couple of years ago at the ripe age of 92, she got to see her son escape obesity, but it was interesting. And we tell people this who we work with, people that come in that we invite into our program. You know, the first thing I tell them is if you live on the East Coast, so I don't know if you ever go crabbing in Connecticut.
Plenty of people do, sure.
But the way that you don't have to have a lid for a bucket of crabs is to have more than one crab in that bucket. Mm-hmm. And because crabs are like people, if one crab is by themselves, they will escape to freedom to not be in the boiling pot that's going to kill them, then you're going to eat them. But if there are two or more, those crabs will pull the one trying to escape back mm-hmm. in. And it was interesting. And I tell people this, your family, your friends have gotten comfortable with you at your present weight. Mm-hmm. They are comfortable whether you're 400 pounds, 500 pounds, 200 pounds, whatever the amount of weight you're at, they're comfortable whether they are not. And they will tell you you're getting too thin when you're not. They will tell you because it's going to threaten them. And sure enough, my mother, God rest her soul, she was an amazing lady. But as soon as that weight started coming off, she's like, "You're getting too thin." I said, "No, I'm not, Mom." and it's just interesting. But we do, and it's so funny, Walt, when we see men and women come alive. I mean, you know, I think about this a lot. You know, recently I was on the phone with a gentleman. He's down like 30 something pounds in about 4 weeks. I mean, it's insane. Sometimes people, you know, with really large people can lose very quickly. But it was so interesting. I said to him, you know, our way to determine ideal weight is not a chart on the wall of a doctor's office. Now, I want people to be healthy. I want them to live a long time. They don't have to do crazy stuff. But it's interesting. If you ask somebody what you believe your ideal weight is, they'll give you an answer that they think is acceptable. But if you ask them this question that Angie and I've crafted over the years of working with, you know, tons and tons of men and women, and say, if the creator of the universe, regardless of your religious beliefs, but the creator of the universe walked into your home with the version of you that you were created to be at your present age, what does that person weigh? That's question number one. And they always know. It's so funny. They might move 3 pounds. They might go up 20 pounds. They might go down. It's just hilarious to me, just intriguing how that gets to the truth because they already know. Second question, and we've had clients who tell us they don't know what to eat because one of our covenants is we will not tell anybody what to eat or what exercise to do because that's stupid. They already know. They already know every time. And one of our clients who's dropped about 200 pounds is so funny. He had never been on a diet. Now, this is a guy more than 200 pounds overweight that never been on a diet in his life, which is rare. I mean, usually we have a question. We have a question on our intake application. We're considering somebody for enrollment. It says how many strategies have you tried, you know, 1 to 5, 5 to 10 or too many to count. It's always too many to count. Mm. But this guy had never been on a formal diet. Yeah. And he said, and when he came into the program, I'll never forget, this has been about 4 years ago. He said, "But Alan, what am I going to eat?" And I said this to him. I said, "Listen, Sean, if your wife and two daughters had a gun to their head and they'd been taken hostage, God forbid that were to happen. And the only way to get them back alive was you to release 1 pound of that excess weight, moving you towards your ideal weight, 1 pound a week. And you save their life. Could you save their life? And what would you do?" And he thought for a minute. It seemed like 10 minutes because thought he hung up on me, truthfully. And it was funny. We were doing a lot of Zoom back then. It was just on phone. And he says, "I've got the answer. I know what I'll do." And he was dead serious. And this just made me want to laugh out loud when he said it. "I know what to do. I'll eat less." Walt, he was 100% serious, and I said, "That is exactly where you start," and that led to, like I said, more than 200 pound weight loss. So it's now did he have to do more? Sure, he was in a wheelchair at the time if he had to move more than 10 feet. But it's interesting. We already know. So number one, we know what we should weigh. We know how to do it already. All of us do. It's common sense. You don't have that people all come to the same conclusion. Do you have the different strategies work for different people? Of course they do. Number three, the question number three is, why, if you're willing to save your own family or you're in that scenario, why won't you save yourself?
Yeah, and that ties into really the root of all these kinds of questions, which is, we summarize that a lot of different ways here on the podcast. One of my favorite ways to describe it is we are our own worst enemies. We will treat ourselves in a way we would never treat our best friends.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, it is fascinating because, and it's the greatest lie in the whole universe, I believe, is tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
If you remember one of my favorite character from cartoons when I was a kid, you remember the cartoon Popeye, the Sailor Man?
Oh, yeah.
You remember his buddy Wimpy? Wimpy's deal with the universe was, I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger day. And that was my weight loss story for 35 years. I will gladly pay you for what I'm eating today on Tuesday. And Tuesday never came.
Right.
And it came, but I ignored it until the next one and then the next one. And unfortunately, I mean, it's sad. I mean, we laugh about some of these things, but what is tragic? I mean, it's tragic when we're on the phone with people and they're talking about getting on an airplane in tears when they have to push the button asking for a seatbelt extender. And not standing up in a meeting because they believe that their opinion doesn't matter because of their obesity. They're wearing their lack of self-control on their outside, and they know it. They can hide it. And this isn't to shame anybody. This is to say, wake up, people. I mean, it's there is no shame. And it's kind of interesting when you shine light in a dark room, regardless of the amount of light, the room becomes light. And go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. And if you're struggling like we did, it does affect whether you realize it or not, your children as you're around. Mm-hmm. I mean, because for one, you're less likely to want to be active with their groups where they're at. You might be, you know, in the back. You're always hidden, if you will, because you don't want to embarrass your child, because it does happen. I didn't even realize one of our youngest was teased, and I wasn't even in the extreme obese, but she was teased about us. And so by a neighbor, and that really hurt. Gosh, that hurt when we found that out.
Yeah.
And the fact that our children worried, I worried about him. Certainly I didn't realize until halfway through his journey that one of our sons, that had been on his mind for years about whether something would happen to his dad.
And the way he framed it was, I guess dad didn't love me enough to do something about it.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's heartbreaking, but what's it kind of, I mean, that's kind of the hell of everything, and not to use such a derogatory term, but what's so fascinating too, is when men and women find out that they have control, when they really figured out, and then we just had a lady that came through our process that, she's down to, what's she said, down like 60 pounds. She does 60 pounds. She'd have weight loss surgery. Weight loss surgery, I mean, if somebody's told to have it, I mean, we certainly not going to argue with the medical professional. But it's interesting. It doesn't work if you don't change. If you don't change the space between your ears. And she gained all her weight back. And it's so funny watching her come alive now as the weight falls off. And I said, isn't it funny to realize that it was always available to you? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter whether somebody is, you know, 73 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get all these stories. We create these stories in our mind that it's not possible for me. The person I'm thinking of, this guy named Rick, he 388 pounds, fused vertebrae, walks with a walker, 52 years of obesity. He was 70 at the time. He's 73 now. He was 70 at the time, and he heart attack survivor, all kinds of heart issues. And I'm not saying this to boast anybody. I'm saying this to give people hope. This guy stepped into the process. He's down 165 pounds right now, and so he had every excuse in the world But he finally said, enough is enough is enough. And it's fun to see it because, and again, not to preach to anybody, regardless of what somebody believes, you know, religiously, it's almost like the creator. We can all agree there is a creator somewhere. And the creator is almost saying, if you'll get this one simple area of self-control under your belt, you handle this very simple thing, I'll open up the floodgates for you. And we see it happen over and over and over again. These things that have nothing to do with weight, but everything to do with it. I mean, it's not, and people want to make it about health. When somebody talks to us about health journey, again, I want people to be healthy. I want them to live a long time. I don't want them to do anything crazy, but my eyes glaze over. But when they start talking, because at the end of the day, that's not what will move the needle. What will move the needle is when people realize what it's costing them in other areas and what the potential that they have when they get it done. That's what gets exciting. The health, if the health was enough to move the needle, everybody would already be in their skinny jeans and their size 4 dresses and size 30 pants or whatever your dream weight is. They'd already be there. It's all the other stuff that we want to ignore. And so that's what gets us passionate is when somebody calls me from New York that works for a 40,000 employee international company and says, hey, this is one of those calls. I said, what do you mean? He said, I'm in New York. CEO of my company was just talking about me and you on stage. I said, really? I don't know your CEO. I've never met him. And I said, that's pretty cool. I said, what about? He said, well, I won the international sales award. And I said, you did. That's fantastic. He said, it was all because of my weight loss journey. I said, really? I said, when did you join the sales force for your company? You've been with them. You were in operations, I thought. He said, that's what's crazy. I'm the first guy in the history of the corporation that's ever won it who wasn't in sales. But my weight loss journey brought in. I said, hang on. What did you just say? You won the, you're not in sales and you won the, he said, no. He said, you're not going to believe it. And in fact, and he's writing a book about his experiences right now. We just approved the chapter he was kind enough to write about Rink Think Dieting, but it's just funny, but it was always available to him. Now that gets me, that excites Angie and I. That's way more, hey, it's way better. Listen, I want your blood sugar to be right. I want your blood pressure to be right. Yada, yada, yada. All that stuff's going to get improved too, but it's the other stuff you're missing. Man, that's the stuff that gets exciting.
What you're talking about here resonates with me, with our audience, with anyone who's ever been in contact with this podcast on a number of different levels. But one of the levels is a phrase that we use a lot. It's a phrase you have not used at all, and I'm not even sure that you think of these terms, but it just fits perfectly what you're talking about. The phrase is limiting beliefs.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. We use that a lot with our clients. You spoke our language. You spoke our love language. So that's eliminating belief. The only limit on our clients is the belief that there is one. And I'm not the first that said that, but that's still bear saying.
And what you're saying about health is also fascinating to me. Health, we've actually spent a lot of time in the last few episodes talking about health from a variety of perspectives. But one of the points I like to make about health is that there's a whole industry related to health. We call it healthcare. And almost none of them actually deal with health. They're all dealing with sickness and illness and injury and all this other stuff. It would be very hard for most of them to even define what health is. Medical professionals say, okay, what's health? But you can't tell me what it is in terms of sickness, illness, disease, injury, or anything like that.
Listen, if it was the healthcare industry really wanted to solve this, I'm going to say something probably very controversial. Okay. And I know they're great.
They used to be controversial. It's not a problem.
They're great healthcare providers out there. The people that mean well and that are doing great work. I submit to that. But if this problem really was a problem that somebody wanted to solve, the growth rate on obesity would not be at more than 90,000 new individuals every single day. We're at I looked last week, it was 924 million worldwide men, women, and children that are obese or morbidly obese and growing by more than 90,000 a day. And what breaks our heart is the hopes, the dreams, the things that they're, I mean, I've literally been on the phone with a morbidly obese man whose wife literally told him she'd already left him because he'd given up. She was there in body, but she'd walked out. And it affects relationships. It affects business. The contrary is also possible. And it's, we get in that limiting belief cycle, like you're talking about, where we say, well, I can't do it. There's no way I can do it. I've got this problem, that problem, this thing. And it's all BS. It's what we decide to believe. Does it mean it's as easy for some as others? No, it does not. I've got a client right now who refused to listen to me for a long time. Now he's listening to me. He's a great client. He lost weight, but it's interesting. And I get a text from it, two or three texts from him every day. He's like, I can't believe it. It's working like this. And it's just funny. There's nothing complicated about it, except the complication that we focus on so much is the belief. It's the belief that it's possible. It's the belief of what you've accomplished. And the reason, for example, the reason that I knew, I literally said to the 388-pound guy who thought I was nuts, I said, I'm 100% confident we can help you solve your weight problem if you'll do the work. He said, you're 100% confident. I said, yeah, I'm positive. And I didn't tell him why I was positive. Okay. But I was. And we look for traits of not quitting, because when people say, how come you guys can get all this weight off people without giving them a diet or exercise plan? And I said, because we teach people how not to quit. And when you teach them not to quit, and it was, this guy had been 45 years in the real estate industry, which by my calculation was at least 5 recessions, and he didn't quit at that. And I said, oh my gosh, all I've got to do is just transfer that over here. And it's so funny, but when people look and find that superhero within them, you know, the part of them that, like, you know, Angie and I are proud parents of 4 grown children. And if anybody were to attack one of our children, I mean, this is supermom right here. I mean, she would go into beast mode, and there's no limitation around that. But it's so interesting, and everybody has that within them, but we listen to that dark side of ourself that says you can't, you better play it safe. Don't go out there. Don't commit. But it's interesting when our clients commit, and we don't ask our clients to go on a public weight loss journey. But we challenge them with the kind of accountability they've never been challenged with before, because it's so interesting when they step into it with both feet. Then they find this thing inside of them, like Angie knows that was within her, the supermom, and then, you know, she'll fight for those kids to her last breath, and doesn't matter that they're all grown. That has nothing to do with it. And when these individuals find that kind of fight is within them, it becomes so simple. And I'm not saying it's easy every day. They're still going to make single serving sizes of Doritos that say family on them. I mean, they are. They're going to make half gallons of ice cream that are, promise you, are single serving. That's how I used to look at it. And that's never going away. But what's interesting, when they find that within themselves, there's a man or woman out there watching, and they knew that person was obese, but they may not, maybe they didn't struggle with obesity, but every single person has a challenge. I mean, we all do. That's our contract with the universe, contract with God, however you want to look at it. And they have a challenge. And when they see that visible thing you cannot hide, the fact I was 304 pounds on a scale was, most people, when they found out what I weighed, probably said, oh my gosh, I thought he weighed 350 or something. I mean, it was, you know, there's no way I could hide it. But and that's a gift. That is a gift. And when that client starts releasing that weight, the person who is on the outside, who's watching the journey, says, oh my gosh, if they can overcome their weight, maybe I can overcome my burden. And then they get hope. And then the person who is dropping the weight develops this identity that was always available, that they're no longer the 388-pound man. They're the 188-pound man that has some extra weight on him, and he's got to go home. Mm-hmm. He's got to go home to that original weight. And it's just fascinating to watch. So it's why the weight will stay off. It's why it, and it has nothing to, hey, don't want you to eat healthy, eat your broccoli. Yeah, eat your broccoli. That's fine. But at the end of the day, it's never about the diet. It's always the decision.
And it's so worth it. I mean, just for us, that our activity level, you know, obviously you have more energy if you release the weight we released. But like, just, we enjoy biking. We live on an island north of Jacksonville, Florida, and it's beautiful. And we have a state park. And every day, unless it's like a torrential rain or 20 degrees, where you'll find us biking. And yesterday on our ride, we saw, you know, just a group of deer, like 10 deer on our, it was about a 15-mile ride. And we look forward to that those signs of all the beauty that we were missing because we just weren't able to get out there. Whether we were just, and even if we had just ridden 1 or 2 miles, we would have seen something, the beach or whatever. But it's so different just being able to be able to physically go out and do things and enjoy. And we do it as a couple, which is fine. But with other, you know, our kids or whatnot, we're able to keep up if we want to go hiking. And I hear so many moms typically that I'm speaking to regret the time they've lost when they weren't able to go to the theme park because they've been, well, one, they've already been embarrassed, and that's to get off a ride because they weren't able to fit in the seat and with their child. Oftentimes that means the child has to get off too, unless there's someone else to be put with. It does really affect everyone, but that embarrassment of just those types of things. And as we've mentioned earlier, just not wanting to go to the ballpark or whatever, because the shame and the embarrassment, and it's overwhelming, but it's exciting to see all of, I think of a lady that lost about 45 pounds with us, and her, she was an artist behind the scenes at home for her family, if you will. But after releasing her weight, she now has an Etsy store. She now is actually doing classes in churches local. She's reinvented herself, and she's also in her early 70s. So it's amazing to see what happens to these folks.
And inspiring, too, no doubt about that. Of course, you also identified in passing, and I want to go back to it, that there is another group of people that probably have the biggest challenge of all. And we were, the way you were describing it, I would have said it was that they were the people who don't persist, people who quit easily. And there are a lot of people who fall into that category. They're often the people that we're trying to talk to here on the show about how to raise your vibration, how to get through better space in your mental space and so forth. And I think it's the portion of the population that in many ways is not even going to listen, but there are sometimes they are going to listen. So that's why I try to talk to you. If you're talking to somebody like that, that's the big challenge. How do you talk to somebody who doesn't feel like they can get it done, who doesn't feel like they can make that kind of shift, who doesn't feel like they have it?
Well, it's interesting that there's never, I don't believe it'll ever happen where somebody will be on my phone that doesn't have a seed of hope. Okay. The reason people reach out to us is because they do have that seed of hope somewhere within them. They don't know it's going to work because they failed so many times. They failed over and over. And, you know, shame is one of the lowest vibrations. Shame and regret and comparison, which is akin to jealousy, those are low vibrations. Certainty, happiness, joy. I mean, you're more of an expert on vibration, but we know a little bit about it. And it's it's so interesting. But when they see, I guess part of the reason we tend to attract people that have had the struggle for a long time, because that was our struggle. And I ask people a lot of times, I say, why me? Why do you think I'm the guy that can help you solve this problem you've had for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, whatever it is? They said, you did it. I don't know how you did it. I said, well, you know, I'm never going to tell you what to eat. That's my jam. I said, it's not your, I said, do you have to change what you eat? Of course you do. But it's so interesting when they get certainty, it changes. And that's how you talk to them. You talk to them about reality. Listen, if a year goes by and you're lucky enough to be still alive, you're just going to be a year older if you don't do something about this. I mean, that's really, really what it is. And when we have people that have kind of lost hope, and we run into those, Okay, we run into those. I do get them where it's just they've got just this little itty bitty bit left. It's the question I have for them: are you sick and tired of it yet? Are you ready to do something about it? I mean, that's the way I talk to them. I mean, because there's going to be changes that have to be made. And, it, you know, does it just because we don't give people a specific diet to follow, does that mean they don't have to change what they're going to eat? As I said before, of course not. They have to. They have to be willing to face the reality and to do something about it. And then as they do it, this thing called certainty appears. It certainly is a powerful vibration. It's a powerful emotion. It's a powerful, however you want to frame it. And it's so interesting. One of the individuals, I think about a lady. I mean, this woman's she's a PhD. She's no dummy. She's a very intelligent woman. And over about a 12-week period, she dropped about 56 pounds. And it was interesting. She still had a little more to go, but it was interesting. On one of our very first calls before the weight was coming off, she said, you know, I fly all over in my work. And she said, every time I get on the plane, I pull out the seatbelt extender that I borrowed from an airline. You know, because the shame, she didn't want to have to push that button that says, stewardess, please come, because everybody stares at you. She said, every time I had to pull that out of my purse, I put it on, she said, I was pushing back tears. I was pushing back tears because I knew that I could do better. I knew that I'd accomplished all these things. I knew that I was a good wife. I knew that I'd been a good daughter. I knew that I was a brilliant individual. She said, but now, and I mean, it's like 2 weeks in or 3 weeks in. It was just funny. The weight had not, it doesn't just magically, we won't have a wand we wave or anything, but it was, she said, she says, the first time I've been on a plane, when I still needed my seatbelt extender, she said, but I didn't want to cry anymore because I knew it was going to be going back to that airline I borrowed it from. And it's so interesting. So when they see that, and it's fun to watch it. I mean, somebody can be struggling with 20 pounds. It can be driving them crazy. But I've also seen people where they're struggling with 200 pounds extra, 300 pounds, and it doesn't bother them bad yet. Doesn't bother them bad enough. I mean, we see that, and that's heartbreaking for us to see. So it's more about, you know, how bad is your problem with weight? Has it gotten bad enough yet? Okay, where it's really dominating you. The second thing is, how committed are you to really solve it? I mean, are you really committed? Are you really willing to do the work? Maybe try a different approach because what your way is not working. I mean, these are questions that we ask. You have to see that. And then at the end of the day, are they willing to do the work and go the distance? Because just like life. I mean, I think the weight is such a great metaphor for building a podcast. I mean, you've been doing this since 2012, right? Is that what I read? Right. I mean, that's amazing. You're OG in the podcast world, okay? Because podcasting, I know, was a thing back then, but there were not the zillion podcasts there are today. So the test of time, the hundred, I'm sure, if not millions of downloads that you had, because you've stood the test of time, you've impacted people's lives. You couldn't have, you know, more today than you did 12 years ago. I guarantee it. Right?
Oh, easily. Yes.
Yeah. And so you had to become an expert on this work. You had to become an expert at it. I'm sure you had experts that came along your side, but at some level, you had to become the expert on this process too. Guess what? Weight loss is the same way. It's identical.
And I can tack on to that by pointing out that when I first started this process, when I first started doing the podcast, I was not even close to being an expert. I started the podcast precisely because I was not an expert, because I needed to learn.
That's rare. That's rare. Most people want to be the expert before they start, but that's not how it happens.
Yeah, no, I was, you talk about being in that place of pain where it's so painful, you got to do something. That's the place I was in. And I had no idea what to do because we were financially devastated at that point. Both of our businesses had been wiped out. And by 2012, we hadn't recovered enough. We were deeper in debt than we were in 2008. And I didn't know what to do. I had no idea what to do. And I couldn't afford to hire anybody to help me to do anything because I didn't have any money. Yeah. It's one of those cash 22 situations. So I literally started a podcast with this thought process. I can't hire a coach. I can't even afford to buy a self-help book, but I can start a podcast because I can do that one for free, and I can bring somebody on for free to teach me how to do this stuff. And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. And there were there times when you wanted to quit?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Guarantee it. I mean, it's no different. It's no different in a weight loss journey. I mean, what the client that we're talking about that's down 100 and almost 170 pounds now is interesting. He had, again, we mentioned he had a heart condition, and we're not doctors, but because of his journey, because of things he'd learned about his body, he was able to catch an increase in water weight retention, which had nothing to do with his eating. It had everything to do with his congestive heart failure. It probably saved his life a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because he becomes so in tune with what was going on because he was following. He followed directions. It's like, it's not complicated. Just follow directions. Do these things. These are the things you can control. We can't control. You can't control the economy. Neither can I. If you learn how to, you, me, Angie, and Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos would like to know how you do it. So nobody has control, but we do have control of certain things that we do. You showed up to your podcast every week. I bet you've done this every week for all those years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I bet missing one would seem weird.
Missing one would ruin my week.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's crazy, but you've developed the habit. And so now, again, I say, I mean, congratulations. I mean, that's success. Longevity proves it. And it's no different. And this guy, did he lose weight as fast as somebody else could have? Oh, heck no. Somebody younger and in better shape could have lost it way faster. But see, we taught him how not to quit. And so it was interesting. Angie did a celebratory post of the day that we made the decision back in 2017 and under it. And I'm not saying this to boast about myself. I say this humbly because it was this client that he did the work. It was, we didn't do the work for him, but he says, because of that day, I'm still alive. Mm. And I mean, that touches us, but it's because he was willing to do the work is really what it is. It's because he showed up for the first time. And I get God bumps when I think about this kind of stuff, because it's fascinating to me, because, and if you ask him, and I'm using him as an example, not to compare. I mean, I know people have challenges. I know people have autoimmune diseases. I know they have mobility issues. We've worked with people in all these different situations. I know, but there is always a way for the committed. And there's always an excuse for those that aren't.
Me, the difference maker that because I was in that pain phase for quite some time, but the difference maker that allowed me to find a way out of it was, yes, just played a big role in it, but what played an even bigger role was finding passions. I had a passion really by accident. I talk about this a lot.
Yeah.
I started the podcast at least like I do, and to my amazement, I loved it. I wasn't expecting that part. That part was a shock. That's the part that you asked me, what would happen if I were to miss a week? Well, I wouldn't allow myself to miss a week because I'm so passionate about it. I have so much love doing this thing that if I didn't have the energy that I get from it every week by doing this show, or more than months a week, my life wouldn't be worth living. My passion is that big about it. So
yeah.
When you find a passion behind it, to me, that's where persistence comes from. Persistence comes from feeling passionate about it.
Sure. Well, and it's interesting. One of our mentors, a longtime mentor who just passed away from cancer, tragically. It was interesting. He watched us kind of go on our weight loss journey. He says, you really should start coaching, consulting people with their weight. And I said, his name's Dan Miller, 48 Days to Work You Love. If you ever heard of that, he was, Dan, when Dan said it to me, I was sitting right here, we're on a call. And I said, Dan, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I said, I don't want to tell people what to eat and what exercise to do. And it was so interesting that, and what I'm relating this to is a few weeks later, maybe it was a month, somebody heard our story and he reached out to me and he literally begged me to work with him. The guy that had more than, he had a lot of weight to lose. And what was so interesting is I heard myself. When he was calling me, I heard the desperation in his voice what I felt standing on that scale at over 300 pounds. And it was interesting. He, um, he convinced me to work with my so I'll give you three sessions, but I said it for the first time I've ever said it in my life. I said, I'm never going to tell you what to eat. I'm never going to tell you what exercise to do, because that is not your problem. And I say it, and I've said it to every client since then, but it was just funny because and it terrified me because I just don't why. But as he started to come alive, this is what's interesting. He ran his first mile of his life. I don't tell people to run, but he decided he wanted to run. He was always in so much shame as a high school and junior high kid because he couldn't run the mile. And he ran the first, his whole family joined him. He's got a Facebook video of his, I mean, to bring tears to your eyes. It was wow. Magnificent. And he started working with people, and in fact, what he does is helps people find passion, you know, and start their passion before they solve all their problems. And it was just so interesting. But seeing that happen, that was what lit the fire. You talk about passion. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't care if people eat asparagus or broccoli. I mean, God, I like them both. I mean, they're okay. I mean, would I rather have a cheeseburger? Yeah, but if I eat them every day, I might have a problem again. And so, but it's, and I believe in people that are secondhand vegetarians. Ribeye is a secondhand vegetable. So but at the end of the day, people have to figure out their own path. And people say, why don't you tell me what to eat? I said, because if I tell you what to eat, I'm going to give you an excuse because it'll be wrong. But if I give you a strategy for building your own plan, if I give you a strategy for where all the responsibility rests between your elbows, and between your ears, then you will have no way out except to say that you failed at it. And when people grasp that and they realize that they are in control, it's comical almost. I mean, it is. And I mean it in a positive way, not making fun of people. It's just, it brings laughter every time when they say, oh my gosh. I mean, in fact, I think while I've been on a client, just hit me with, this individual hit me with a cup of nuts. It's like 10 nuts in it. And he's figured this out. It's so funny. He's figured this out. Do I want to meet 10 or 20? I don't care. I mean, it's up to him. I mean, it's what he does. But he's figured it out. And he's just like sending me these photos every day. It's hilarious. And not everybody does that. and the scale, and it's so funny. He said, you know, the formula you gave, he said, I'm within like 0.2 pounds. He said, it works. I said, no kidding. It's math. Math is an exact science, and it doesn't mean that you don't have to be a nuclear scientist to figure it out, by the way. Although we have helped rocket scientists too. We have had NASA scientists that we work with. So we're not as smart as they are about building rockets in space. That's for sure.
Something I totally appreciate, because my brother is a rocket scientist. He works for NASA as a computer developer. Yeah, so
there you
go. He's definitely much smarter on computer development than I am. Yeah, but anyway, the one thing that I do know is that it's all mindset, and that's what I loved about what I read about you guys and what you're talking about here. That what drives everything? Mindset in combination with belief. In fact, we live in a world where literally everything is belief. We have trouble believing that, but it really is true. In this world of belief, everything is belief. I mean, even fact is belief, which is kind of terrifying after a while. But when you live in a world of belief and you have to come face to face with the fact that your beliefs are creating your life, and that's one of those jarring moments. That's the moment. That's similar to the moment you experienced when you step on the scale that day. 7 years.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. And there's one other piece I would add to it. It's permission. And it's interesting. A client that came in. What was it, Dave? 3 weeks ago. I think it's 3 weeks ago. It was just interesting. I mean, the guy was over 400 pounds, and I just asked him what it would look like the day he stepped on the scale at his ideal weight. And he literally, and this is a tough guy. He literally almost broke down because he'd never given himself permission to even believe it was possible.
Right.
And the weight's falling off this guy. I'm like, what are you doing? I said, don't do anything. He said, no, I'm doing this. I said, okay. I said, you don't have to do crazy. He said, no. He said, it's just, I've never, people, we don't give ourselves permission to win. I mean, it's like you being willing to do the podcast. You gave your permission to be bad at it long enough till you got good at it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is. And you're clearly excellent at it now. You've done it for a long time. I mean, you wouldn't still be doing it if you hadn't been successful at it. And it's no different when people realize that winning, it's this perpetual reframe. And when somebody comes in, like I think a client, Tony, that he was, and I tell him, I said, hey, listen, your choices you make, if you follow the strategies, but if you get off the strategies, probably take you 2 or 3 weeks to get back home. And it was, he was about 320 pounds. And I said, but it's your choice. And he was doing really well, dropped, I don't know, you know, 3 weeks in, he was probably 20 pounds down, whatever it was. So it was quite a bit, you know, because a lot of the bigger guys are going to lose quicker anyway. And it was working. And then he decides to go off the rails, his choice. And he found out what the price of that was, because it was about 3 weeks before it started turning again. I mean, he ultimately ended up losing more than 120 pounds, but it was interesting. But instead of saying, I failed, I quit, you know, like you had challenges. I'll guarantee every podcast didn't turn out great. I'll guarantee you that there were, I'm using this as a metaphor. But he had challenges along the way, but now he has a roadmap out of hell, literally. So he doesn't, and if he chooses to go back to hell, that's his choice. I can't change that. But he won't ever choose it again. And it's just so interesting when you have the roadmap out of the wilderness. It's so easy to follow it, and it doesn't. It's not going to take. Listen, again, don't want you eating right. Yeah, don't want people doing exercise. Well, if they're healthy enough to exercise, some people can't do it. But if they are. But at the end of the day, I want people to be free. And when you're free, then you talk about vibration, you talk about relationships changing, you talk about parenting starting to get better, you're talking about work and wealth, dreams start to come true, then the vibration goes up. It doesn't go up in a linear fashion. It goes up exponentially.
Yeah, it goes up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And then you look at it, you say, wow, the elevator went up, but it sure didn't feel like it because I just rode a roller coaster.
Well, everybody, it's just like this. I tell our clients all the time, but weight loss you think is this, but it's more like this.
Right.
It's yes. All, you know, and then you go down. It's no different.
Well, yeah, the squiggles are actually much more accurate than the straight lines, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
The thing that also goes along with that is that we have a tendency as human beings to stay stuck. And the reason that we tend to stay stuck is that we resist changing those beliefs. That's why I brought in the concept of beliefs earlier. We don't want to have to change the beliefs. We have lots of terms to describe this. We call it a comfort zone. I like to call it a familiar zone because there's nothing comfortable about it, but it's still the same thing. I don't care what label you give to it. It's the zone where you don't change your beliefs. And one of the things that I discovered along my route was I realized, and I think it's probably true for a lot of people, I realized that I had actually believed I couldn't change my beliefs, that it really was not within my power. I believed what I believed because that's what I'd always believed. I didn't think it was something you could shift. I didn't think it was something you could actually change. The notion that I could choose to do something else and actually believe it was that was bullshit. There was no way that was gonna happen. Until I found out that, well, no, it was actually the belief that was bullshit. The belief was killing my belief about belief.
Well, we're always looking to justify what we believe. I mean, we are. We're looking we build coping mechanisms. You know, for myself, when I was 304 pounds, well, I had a coping mechanism to be 299.9 pounds.
Oh,
I had built the belief that that was okay. I was there. I didn't have any major medical conditions yet. I didn't have any major, you know, any of these things yet. But when it crossed the 300 pound threshold, it shattered that belief. And then these other things started coming in. And then I started having to ask the question, could something else be true? Could it be true that it wasn't possible for me to get back to my ideal weight? Could it be true that I might could live more? Could it be true that I might be buying time? I mean, think about it. Of all the commodities that there are, and time is the one that is the most challenging. I mean, take Steven Jobs. He can't buy time. He could pay. I mean, the guy invented the iPhone, and I mean, are you kidding? But he couldn't buy time. So when to literally be able to show someone how to buy time, then you start talking about quality of time and building beliefs around that, and we challenge our clients to examine the beliefs that supported the obesity. Because there were a lot of them, and you have to build an amount of belief that is so. I mean, and the society does it for us. I mean, because they're going to make everything okay nowadays. I mean, everything is okay. I mean, everybody's okay.
I mean, we build the belief, and the society reinforces it.
Yeah, I mean, and so you know, you go into the stores to make you not feel bad, and you've got the plus size mannequins, and it's like instead of feeling bad, what if it were possible for you to look like Daniel Craig? I mean, you know, I mean, it coming out of the water in the Bahamas. I mean, what if it were possible? And you start, you look at, I think it was Ernestine Johnson, the lady's 80, was she 84 or so? I mean, but this woman decided she was going to be a weightlifter at age 55. And she looks like a 40-year-old. I mean, but it's, I know, and we have clients that, you know, from their mid 20s all the way up. But when we get an older client, it's very difficult for them initially to believe it's possible because they say, "If I waited too long," and I'm like, "Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Let's examine it." And then when you start examining the beliefs that they had around it, and I said, I think of one client. He's 20 years older than his wife, and he was in his late 60s at the time. And about 100 pounds overweight. And he just knew he wouldn't live to see his 20th wedding anniversary. He was madly in love with his wife. They had an amazing relationship. And I said, well, let's start finding examples of youth for you. What would it look like for you to be where you wanted, if you could snap your fingers? And he started thinking about walking on his hands. I mean, because that's what he used to do as a teenager to get attention, walking on his hands. Now, he didn't walk on his hands any, but it was interesting. He started studying the Centurion Society. He joined it. That's where you learn all these techniques. And he started realizing that people over 90 were doing things that were much older than him. He started realizing these possibilities and he started asking better questions that's how he shifted his beliefs. And then the 100 pounds come off. And because you start realizing maybe that is possible for me, just going back to your original question you asked earlier of when people don't believe it's possible, it's because they're asking all the wrong questions. They're asking, why me? Why me? Why is it so hard for me to lose weight? Why can't I? Will you pass the ice cream? Why can't I do this? And don't forget the pizza. I want the pizza too. And nothing wrong with either of those. I have a belief that all food's good. It's just not meant to be eaten in one day. And so, but as a society, we think these things because, like you said, we start with ourselves, and then it expands out into the beliefs of the society. But start question everything. And it's just amazing when people start to do that, they realize that other things are possible that they thought were impossible. And
you're reminding me of something. You're reminding me of a process. I don't know if you're familiar with Abraham Hicks, but this is an Abraham Hicks process. And one of their processes is called the "Wouldn't It Be Nice If" process. Wouldn't it be nice if, and then you allow yourself to dream about something. Wouldn't it be nice if I lost 100 pounds? Wouldn't it be nice if I could actually walk on my hands? Wouldn't it be nice if I could actually go dancing? I've never been able to dance in my life. Wouldn't it be nice? You start expanding your belief system just by putting a little imagination into your brain about, well, wouldn't it be nice if I could do? Yeah, I can't do that right now, but wouldn't it be nice if I could?
Yeah, and because if you get rid of those other crabs in the bucket that we talked about earlier, the people who are around you that say, oh, that's not possible. Just go, because you're threatening them. That's what they're worried about. And if you start getting around more people that believe that it is possible, how long does it, people say, how long is it going to take me to reach my ideal weight? I said, I don't know. It's up to you. I said, when do you want to reach your ideal weight? And then they start thinking a year or two. I said, wrong answer. And they say, no matter what they say, it's wrong answer. This is the only right answer. The right answer is, so when do you want to reach your ideal weight? And they say to me, a year, 6 months, 2 years, whatever. It depends on how much weight they have lose. It's the wrong answer. So what do you mean? I said, the right answer is yesterday. But that's not possible right now. So let's figure out what is possible. Let's build a strategy around it. But you have to start examining the belief that it's possible again. The belief that in what you really want in declaring what you really want. It's like, wouldn't it be neat? Wouldn't it be fun? Like you're saying what Abraham Hicks does. But we don't do that. We're taught, how many kids at age 5 are singers, dancers, artists, musicians? And they're not good at it, but we look at it and we encourage them. By the time they reach junior high, that's the same group of kids. Are you a singer? Are you a dancer? Are you a musician? Are you an artist? And all of them will keep their hands down because of societal pressure.
I learned the most from too, because the 5-year-old isn't uninhibited.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's such a beautiful. But see, that's still available to us at age, at age 50, at age 60, at age 40, at age 30, at age 70 or 80. It's still available, but because we're worried about what other, who cares what other people think. Here's the thing. I think Will Rogers said this: when you're 18, you care about what people think. When you're 40, you don't care what they think. And when you're 60, you realize they weren't thinking about you anyway. They were thinking about themselves. I think I've said that about right, but it's the truth. And they're not thinking about you. So go do what it is you want to do. And I have to do crazy to achieve this goal. No, you don't. You just have to not. You have to be willing not to quit. It's like podcasting. You have to be willing not to quit. And so do you have to make changes? Of course. Or is there work to do? Of course. But you first have to start with the possibility that everything you've learned was for a reason. Everything, and that there's, and those things that you learned are not wasted. But don't resent it. Be grateful, and it all starts with gratitude. Because I think gratitude's up there on the high emotion chart, high vibration chart. If I'm not sure, but being grateful, be grateful for those things, and instead of resenting it, and the fact that it's harder for you. I mean, we've got clients who have autoimmune disease, and it's hard for them. It's really hard, but they still lose weight. Because when they learn to be grateful that it's more challenging for them, means that there may be more possibility for them at the other end of the rainbow when they reach that ideal weight, because they had to walk through that fire to get there. And I'm using fire as a metaphor, but it's interesting. The bigger the challenge, the greater the reward is what I always believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny too. You mentioned earlier how not all podcast episodes come out great, and you're right. Not all of them do. Most of them do. One of the tests that I always apply is, am I smiling at the end? No, I'm smiling right now. The other test is, what time is it? If it's at least an hour and it feels like we just started, that's the other test. That's the other proof that I'm really enjoying a lot, that I'm getting a lot out of. And that's exactly what's happened with this episode.
That's true.
Yes, too. Yeah.
There are two things that we need to do before we wrap this thing up, because we do have to wrap it up. One is, especially since you're in the coaching business, but you're also in the business of telling people that you have certainty about achieving your goal, that means they have to know how to find you. How do they find you?
The easiest way to find them, we've created a training, especially for your audience. If they will go to Transform My Future, spell it all out, TransformMyFuture.com/LOA transformmyfuture.com/LOA today, which is the podcast here. And they can go and they can watch a training that we did. It's totally free. We'll leave it up there ongoing. And what is this? The 5-step strategy that all of our clients, we teach our clients how to lose 25, 50 or more than 100 pounds, no matter how much they've struggled in the past. If they will watch that, there's nothing to buy. Go figure. It's totally free and it works. And we've literally had people that have emailed us that one it saved her life, which I didn't plan on. It was kind of interesting. Somebody that we don't even know, but she was laid in a hospital bed last Mother's Day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That it saved her life. We've had other people email 30, 40 pounds came off just because they used it. If they will watch that and treat it seriously. And there's a way to contact us if they want to know more beyond that, but it's totally free training, so they can watch that.
I love it. Well, that actually leads into the second thing. And this is actually something that it took me, you mentioned that I've been doing this podcast 11 and a half years now. It took me 9.5 years to find this thing, to even notice that it needed to be done. But I did finally notice a couple of years ago that everybody who comes on the show, myself, my co-host, guests like you, we're givers. We found something in our lives. We want to give it back to others. We want to help other people. We put on podcasts. We publish blog posts. We go onto social media. We share stuff. We put up websites, do videos. You know, here's our 5-step walk. We do all these things. And we help people in ways that we never know about, that we never hear about. We never see them. We never meet them. And we never get credit for them. I said, whoa, wait a minute. Hold on. Stop the train. We don't get any credit for it. So I like to say on behalf of those people you've never met, never seen, never will meet, never will see, who you've been helping in all these different ways without knowing about it, thank you. Thank you for what you've been doing because you're making a difference.
You're welcome. And I would say this, many times in the world that we're in, you know, it's interesting. There, just like in podcasting, there's times when you want to quit, and there's it is, and those wins are way more important to us than any dollar signs. I mean, do we have to have dollars to run our business? Of course we do. She likes electricity. I don't know what's in it her. You know, she likes it. Selfish that way. But it's interesting when somebody reaches out to you and says, "You saved my life." And really what we did is we didn't save their life. We just showed them that the prison door was the door that had always been open. And we showed them that all they've got to do is lean on it and freedom's waiting on them on the other side. It's just that easy. It really is. And when they find their way out, man, that's priceless. We love that. That's what we do it for. That's a drug. That's a drug that we recommend.
It's funny. Jody Lynn obviously was not able to join us today, but one of the things I always ask Jody Lynn to do is pick the one thing out of the show that and you just did that, even though you're not here. You performed her role for her.
Oh, perfect. Well, tell Jody Lynn she can take the day off. No
problem. So perfect.
No. Long way from it.
No, it was great. It was really well done. So yeah, thank you. You even gave us the cherry on top that we like to have. So we appreciate the cherry on top. Well, thank you, Alan and Angie, for all of what you have shared and what you've learned on your own journey and what you're helping other people with their journeys to do. It's nice to actually hear about dieting that actually works because you don't have to worry about dieting anymore. Yeah. That's a nice thing. That's really a good thing. I mean, I'll tell you my I've never really had a huge weight issue ever in my life. My ex-wife and I separated and divorced a year ago. Since we separated and divorced, I lost close to 30 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And I asked myself why, and I realized it's because I changed. I mean, I was kind of forced to change, but I changed. I changed my thoughts. I changed my behavior. Look what happened. The weight. I kind of wanted to do it. It was like, yeah, that's sort of something I want to do. It was not one of my top priorities, but because I made changes led to results.
Isn't it crazy? I mean, it's so funny too. I think about this one guy. I talk about a lot. We call him our apple pie guy. About 3 or 4 years ago, it was funny. It was right after Easter, and he was celebrating with his family on Easter, and you know, had the meal and stuff. And the next day, we had a client call him, and he's the first thing, and he thought I was going to really beat him up, you know, emotionally, and he said, you know what I had for breakfast? Real somber. And I said, what'd you have for breakfast? He said, I had apple pie. Like he was confessing. He thought he was confessing. I said, good for you. You figured it out, didn't you? He said, "You're not mad?" I said, "Of course I'm not mad." I said, "I love apple pie." I said, "Not for every meal." I said, "Yeah." I said, "But you figured it out how to do it and still win, didn't you?" And he said, "How'd you know?" I said, "Because you're willing to admit it." And I said, "Because that tells me that you're doing the work that we prescribed in the process." And he said, "Yeah, all I had to do was I knew I couldn't have it yesterday and still do what I meet my targets and all this kind of stuff." He said, "It works." He said, "You're like the no guilt weight loss guy." I said, "Listen, guilt has no place. Guilt and shame have no place here. You're learning, and it's funny when people get that." And so yeah, what you did is you made a decision, and 30 pounds fall off of you. Isn't that funny?
It's crazy. What's even crazier is I saw my ex recently and compared notes with her, and she hadn't lost anything. But she hadn't made any change. She hadn't made any change in on that. Yeah. The thought pattern is the same as it was when we separated.
Well, what I'd really encourage you to do is look for the things that have nothing to do with health, nothing to do with physical activity, nothing to do with diet or any of that, that have improved because the 30 pounds were gone.
Oh yeah. The 30 pounds is almost incidental.
Yeah.
It's almost incidental. Everything because I've had to make massive shifts in my life because of that event. That event, I mean, it just basically pulled my legs out from under me. So I really had no choice. I had to, it was either that or else perish. There wasn't a whole lot of options. And because I am who I am and the kind of things that I talk about here on the podcast, massive action. And when you take massive action, you get massive results. You can't know in advance what the massive results are going to be. I couldn't have told you what they were going to be. If you had asked me where I was going to be in a year, I would have said, that would have been my answer. I had no idea. But yeah. I took massive action, and it did lead to massive results.
Look at how you're beaming. I mean, see, that's the thing that strikes me. I mean, I saw an immediate shift in when you started talking about it, because there's a sense of accomplishment, and it should be. 30 pounds, no joke. I mean, that's no joke. That's harder to lose than 100, just so you know, for most people. Because you could very easily make this argument that, oh, I'm okay. Everybody else is much fatter than me, so I'm okay. But you made the decision, you took massive action, and now you're getting the benefits of it. And it's obvious. You talk about raising vibration. That'll move it up quickly.
Raising my vibration was the goal, actually. My goal was never to lose 30 pounds. My goal was to raise the vibration. I can't say that. There was a goal in there that I wanted to lose 30 pounds, but that was like number 17 on the list. It was not near the top. And I was like, I'll get to that, you know. But the main thing is I want to raise the vibration, and oh my God, there goes the pounds.
Watch the floodgates open.
Yeah, exactly.
that's the exciting part. So good for you. Congratulations. Yeah.
And there's more to come. Unfortunately, there's no more to come here. We're out of time. We're like 12 minutes past time. I can't.
we're having fun. You
guys for hours at a time here. But I've loved the time that we spent. So thank you so much for being on the show. It's been really, really great.
Thank you for having us, Walt. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you to our podcast listeners everywhere. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye.